Welcome to the Fit 40 podcast, where we take all the confusing, conflicting fitness and nutrition information and break it down so that you can live your healthiest, strongest, most energized life. I'm your host, Brian Fitzsimmons. Let's get it started. All right. What's up, everybody? Welcome back for another awesome podcast. We have another incredible guest. We got Jessie Cracco with us today. She has a lot of great information because she is a health coach and personal trainer for Fueled by Balance. There, she also has a bachelor's in psychology with a minor in neuroscience and public health, and also has that dual certification of ACE and Precision Nutrition One, like myself. So she's good people. I know we're going to have a fun time talking about a lot of really good concepts. So Jessie, welcome to the show.
All right. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to chat with you today.
Hey, same here. Same here. Now, before we get going, I want to tell the listeners that we're doing this on Zoom, a little bit different. So if you have listened to the past couple of shows, I sound like such a jerk cutting people off because of the previous software. So this should sound a lot cooler and I don't sound like such a dick. So before we go into all the things that I have on my notepad right here, I'd love to know your origin story. What got you into this space, like fitness, nutrition? Everybody seems to have a fun story. So what's yours?
All right. So before we started recording, guys, I told Brian I need him to cut me off if this gets too long. I've kind of been cross-trained in a bunch of different things that have nothing to do with fitness that eventually led me to this, that I think make me really good at my job now, which is cool because I think it's a little bit of a different background than a lot of people who get into fitness and nutrition. So I'll kind of give you that career timeline and also share the story of my own fitness journey, because I think that that has evolved a lot from, you know, the typical eating 1200 calories because I thought I should and doing high intensity all the time to now like really being obsessed with good programming and effective strength training, that sort of thing. So that's come a long way too. So okay, I went to college for psychology because I was like set on the fact that I was going to be either a clinical psychologist or some sort of neurologist. My brother is like my best friend. We're still really close. He grew up with a lot of mental health issues and I wanted to help people. So I went to school with that intention. Meanwhile, my college had a really good physical therapy graduate program. So I got the opportunity while I was in school to take credits in exercise related stuff that would work towards my psychology degree. And I just liked exercise. I was never like a strong athlete, but I played a lot of sports. I was very like rah, rah, like I'm a hype person. I like to get my team motivated. So my boyfriend at the time, now my husband, actually played baseball and he used to lift weights. So he got me into like bodybuilding.com used to have this body space. It was like my space for fitness dorks.
Now you're throwing it back.
Yeah. So I followed like Jamie Eason's lifting programs, her bodybuilding programs.
That's an OG.
Yeah. So that was like the first fitness thing I ever did. And I'm like competitive with myself where I'm like, okay, if this is my goal, here's my inputs and here's my outputs. And I started to be like, wow, I can change my physique through doing this stuff. So I was doing that just for fun. Meanwhile, I'm in school and I'm like, oh, sweet. There's the, like, I took an exercise psychophysiology class. I took exercise psychology. The school that I was at, I got the opportunity to work in a cadaver lab in my anatomy class. So I'm in these classes and they're talking about how exercise and nutrition can change your brain health and reduce symptoms of anxiety and depression and can prevent many of these mental health things that I knew I wanted to help people with. And again, that's like 2009, 2010. And since then, that research has just become more and more abundant. But back then, I thought it was so cool because in my mind, I always was like, well, the routes are cognitive behavioral therapy or medicine, right? And I didn't realize like you can help people prevent these issues. So I thought that that was very cool, but I still in the back of my mind was like, I'm not going to be a personal trainer. Like this is so egotistical of me, but I was like personal trainer, like anybody could write a workout, right? Like I don't think I want to do that for my career. And the idea of physical therapy was like depressing being in an office, just doing the same little movements over and over with people. So I wasn't interested in that. So I was like, okay, exercise is still a hobby, right? But I'm kind of like adding these things to my toolbox as I go. So I graduate from school and I graduated a year early. So I did something crazy. Like I had this adventure year where I, while like before I start real life and do graduate school and then start a career, I moved to the Virgin Islands and I lived in St. John. During that time, I took a ferry to take my GREs on another island. I applied for all the grad programs. I got into an accelerated nursing program and a clinical psych program because I still didn't know what I wanted to do, but I wanted to help people somehow. Meanwhile, I'm living on this island with all these people who are just live in the present, have fun, enjoy life, whatever, right? So I'm totally changing my type A personality type of but I'm goal-oriented. What do you mean? Just enjoy life. So kind of changed my perspective. I come home. So after my year, the summer before I was about to start grad school, I became a nurse's assistant. So I worked in a nursing home, helping people go to the bathroom, the most basic job that a nurse's assistant could do.
Doing the Lord's work.
Yeah. And I was this is not for me. I could not work in a hospital setting. This is so depressing. Thank goodness for nurses and doctors and people who are good at that field, because it was just not it for me. I had actually volunteered for this organization throughout high school, but I actually also did an internship with a hospice organization that served children who had lost their parents to pretty messed up violent situations. Again, loved it, loved what I did. But I kind of saw that side of psychology where I was I thought I wanted to be a counselor. I thought I wanted to help kids. And it's pretty hard to disconnect and enjoy your own life because you go home and you can't really compartmentalize it very well. It takes a special skill to do that. This other job kind of landed on my lap and I made a decision that, you know what, I'm not going to do any of this stuff I thought I was going to do because it is so draining and I can volunteer and I can help people and it not consume my whole life. So I took a job in IT service sales of all things, completely out of left field, nothing I'd ever studied for. One of my aunts worked for this huge company. It was we hire kids out of college all the time. You want to just try it? We give good professional training. We'll teach you the job. We just need somebody who is a go-getter. So I take this job thinking I guess I'll learn while I'm figuring out what I want to do. And I end up there for 4.5 years. And it was a very good company. Again, I was not happy. The job was not for me. But I learned a lot of really cool skills about sales is figuring out what somebody's gap is and helping provide value to them. A good salesperson is not just pushing on whatever product they have. They're saying hey, what are your needs? Can I help you? And yep. I think now that I'm in this field of fitness, a lot of that applies. It's anybody could read a book or get certifications, but to get somebody to actually want to change, you really need to learn what are your roadblocks? Why aren't we able to make it into the gym? Why are we making some of these choices in our foods? And then meeting them where they are and saying okay, cool. Then here's maybe a couple solutions and options. What do you think? How does this feel for you? And they need to tell me that it's the thing they want to do, because then they're more likely to do it. So
it's interesting to bring that up. Sorry to cut you off, but it's so funny, talking to other coaches, cause we all run businesses for the most part or are somewhat involved in the business side, and people are so against selling. And it's we literally sell people every day. We're selling them on eating more protein, on sleeping a little bit more. And it's it's not that different. If you're not a sleazeball, it should be about the same.
Yeah. And now it's I'm selling something I truly believe is going to help somebody. I'm not selling. And to me, a sales call with a potential client is not a sales call. It is hey, is this a good fit for you? Here's the service I provide. Genuinely, I am not in it for quick fixes. We are doing a long haul thing. I'm going to be totally honest with you about what the expectations are. Is it the right time? And is it the right fit for you? And if it is, awesome. We're going to have a really good relationship. And if it's not, I'm not trying to force somebody into a square peg into a round hole, you know? So I was at this job doing IT sales. My husband got a job offer to go back to St. John. My company allowed me to transfer and work remote. So it was wow, this is crazy. I still hate my job. I actually got certified to be a trainer while I was working there, because I was maybe I could start training on the side and I can build up a business and then eventually get the security to quit. So we sell our house, and we were around Baltimore at the time. We sell our house, we ship his truck to the islands, like it's this whole thing. We get there, and a few months later, Hurricane Irma and Maria hit. So two Category 5 hurricanes. The place we're
Jeez.
staying in loses a roof. Brett loses his job because there's no tourism now. We had just uprooted our whole life. So we moved back in with my parents. We are both from Delaware. We moved back in with my parents, like, uh-oh, we don't know what's next. Like, we're married. Brett doesn't have a job now. He left his job in Baltimore. I'm working remote for this company. I don't really love what I do. But it's the first time in 6 years we haven't had mortgage or a rent or anything. Like, I think now's the time I need to do it. So I quit my job and
Prime
I
time.
dove headfirst. I said, we don't have a mortgage. Like, when else am I going to go all in and like have the take be able to take this risk? So I quit my job. I went to this gym, and well, I mean, I got the job before I quit my job. But I go to this gym and I'm like, listen, I really want to become a personal trainer. And this guy who owned the gym, he's awesome. He was like, listen, I have a daughter who's your age. Like, are you sure you want to do this? Like, you have a 401k, you have health insurance. Like, you really want to leave your job to be a personal trainer? Like, this is a hobby. This isn't a career. And I was like, I'm going to make it my career. I love this stuff. I know I want to do this. So I really took the opposite approach of what a lot of macro coaches take because I saw this dysfunction in the bodybuilding space. And I was like, okay, I actually did like my motto was like count colors, not calories. We're gonna
I like
focus on
that.
food quality, we're gonna focus on getting strong. So in 2020, the gyms closed, obviously. At that point, I kept all of my clients, but I was like, okay, I gotta shift gears. I was training them over Zoom and on FaceTime. I started writing programs to sell, like 12-week programs. And I'm technically incompetent, as you saw me trying to figure out my computer for this. So I hired a graphic designer. I wrote up programs in Microsoft Word, and she made it pretty so that I could sell them online. And I did that for a little bit, and then I had two babies. So I had one in 2020 and one in 2022. And during that time, Jillian Rebecca, who owns Fueled by Balance, we had actually gone to middle school together, and we were acquaintances. We didn't know each other, like we knew each other, but we weren't super tight or anything. I knew she had competed in bodybuilding, and I had kind of been cheering on her evolution of fitness because I saw her go from that person who was training 3 hours a day and barely eating to now encouraging women to fuel their bodies and get strong and get healthy. She reached out to me and said, like, hey, we should really collaborate. Like, basically, I have this business and I have so many clients that I need another me. Do you want to come work with me? And I was like, I don't know about you online coaches. Like, I don't know. Is it like, are you guys really like, how do you help people with form if you're doing this online? And I don't know, you're having them all count their calories. Aren't they going to have dysfunctional relationships with food? And I told her, I was like, I'll take a handful of your clients. But I love it in the gym. I'm probably not gonna go full in. Like, we'll see how it goes. And within 2 months, I was 100% in, on board, feeling like now I'm able to really change people's lives. It's not just I see you 3 times a week in the gym and then you go home to unhealthy habits. It's like we're really unwinding patterns in women's brains about obsessing over the scale and their size, about feeling like they can't eat foods that they love. And working on their stress, working on their sleep, working on reducing caffeine. Like, there's so many things that are all encompassing that now it's like, as an online coach, I feel like we're able to make a much bigger impact. So then we've grown. We now have three other coaches, and I help coach our new coaches. So I still have my own clients one-on-one. If anybody's local, I still will meet up with them in the gym and do like a movement consultation. But I'm pretty much completely online with Fueled by Balance and absolutely love it. And what we primarily focus on is helping women speed up their metabolisms and get their bodies to work for them by putting on muscle mass and focusing on eating good
And that makes me so happy to hear,
food.
because anybody who's been listening to this show for a little bit knows that lean body mass is like that word for anybody who watches like Live with Andy Cohen or something. They have that word
the
up.
Word
that
of the
says,
day.
The word of the day. Take a drink when you hear it. Lean body mass is ours.
That's
pretty much it.
That is it. Put on muscle, eat protein, lift heavy, put on muscle. Let's train smarter instead of just feeling like you need to just work out more and more and more and see how many calories you burn. Like, none of that matters. Put on muscle and your body starts to work for you.
Exactly. It's like shifting the conversation from let's get smaller, smaller, smaller to like, let's actually kick ass at life.
Yes. And I feel like that's kind of like my own fitness journey. I learned that through experience and like through seeing my own body change, realizing like, whoa, this is wild. I used to train so much when I thought I was just training for aesthetics and I thought I was so healthy. And I was active and I was eating nutrient dense foods, but like, when I shifted that focus and I really stopped paying attention to aesthetics at all, I started focusing on, I read Mike Matthews, Bigger, Leaner, Stronger. And I was
Classic.
Like, you know what? I never really do barbell deadlifts or barbell back squats. Like, I should probably learn these skills. I'm a trainer. So I spent a year being like, I'm just going to refine these skills. And I focused on how to get better at a lift until eventually now I can lift very heavy because I have good form. And deep range of motion. But I started doing that and I realized like, whoa, I am 20 pounds heavier than I was before. And I look probably healthier now. And I look just as lean. Like nobody would know that I gained 20 pounds. And again, it's taken years to put on that, right? Muscle mass doesn't happen overnight, but I'm 20 pounds heavier. And now my body's working for me. I go on vacation and I don't just gain it back like that. Like, I am able to keep it off through having two babies and through, so all of that is because muscle is like insurance that uses calories all the time.
Exactly. And I know there was a trend maybe like this time last year, maybe 2 years ago, where like women especially were posting pictures of them having tons of muscle, 10, 20 pounds heavier, and comparing it to 10, 20 pounds lighter. And the change, like the education piece as far as people's understanding of body composition and their goal weight actually being way under where their goal body would be. Have you found that like in your own and your clients' journeys that it's like, hey, we're probably like 20 pounds heavier if you really want to get what you want to get?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't think any of them really believe me until they see it in their own bodies. Like, even if you show them pictures of other people or whatever, like nobody really, I think we have it so ingrained in us as women that like, you need to be lighter, you need to be smaller, you need to be a lesser pant size. And then they'll be 6 months in and be like, this is crazy. I fit into the same clothes that I fit, like the jeans that I used to fit in when I was 15 pounds lighter, but I'm fitting in them now. How is that possible? And I'm like, that's muscle mass.
Yeah. But it's like the booty's filled out, but the waist is like, oh my God, there's so much space here.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you can sculpt your body, but we need to shift the focus a little bit. I usually tell them like, listen, some of this is going to be blind faith at the beginning. If you can trust me for 3 months, when I tell you like, we're going to eat more and we're going to build strength, I promise you in 6 months, you're gonna be like, all right, tell me what to do. Like, I got that. You're going to believe it inherently once you see it for yourself. But at first it is going to be scary because it's very opposite of what like fitness culture tells us we ought to be doing.
Yeah. And unlearning that stuff is, it's harder than learning the actual like right way to do things, because how many years has Weight Watchers been pushing their thing where it's like good and bad foods, or everybody talking about get smaller, smaller, smaller. Like, we're trying to undo 30, 40, 50 years of messaging.
Absolutely. And so many people, I think I was really lucky, like growing up, my mom never talked about weight and I'm seeing, it's just abundant in the amount of women who are like, they were picked apart in terms of what they ate or how they looked or their size. And then they pass that along to their daughters. So I'm like very cautious of how I talk. I have two little girls, so I'm very cautious of how we talk about food. Like, we don't talk about weight. We talk about like, oh, spinach gives us energy. Like, what kind of colorful foods do we want to add? Cause we're going to run really fast.
And I think that's like an evolution thing, because it seems like there are definitely cultures that center around food and they're like, eat up, eat up, eat up. And then they'll be the same, like your mom will be saying, or your grandma, eat this, eat this. And then they'll pinch you and be like, you're getting fat. Or they're going to be like, you look skinny, eat up. And it's like, it's always a reflection on your body. And it's like, do we really have to talk about food this way?
No, yeah, we shouldn't. So, yeah, I see that now and I'm like, wow, I was really lucky that I never had that thing where I was like, oh, you need to do this or you need to do that. But I definitely had I didn't realize that it was dysfunctional at the time, but like the first time I ever tracked macros, it was like the Livestrong app. It was called MyPlate, similar to MyFitnessPal. I'm 5 feet tall, 5'0", and I am a female. I type that in and it says, I don't care how active you are, you need 1200 calories because you're short. And so like I lost weight and I kept losing weight and I'm like, man, I'm so ripped. I have abs for the first time. Like I thought this was so cool. And I remember my mom being like, you're starting to look a little skinny. And I'm like, nope, I'm so healthy. And now I look back and I'm like, man, the thing, like this is a podcast. I'm putting this in air quotes, clean eating. Like I thought I was eating so clean because
did you clean it with soap?
Yeah. I didn't eat any refined carbs. I didn't eat like when I was tracking macros and trying to stick to only 1200 calories, I was eating like meat, vegetables, low sugar fruits. Like I would restrict certain fruits because I was like, well, a banana has a lot of sugar, so I'll only put a half of that in my smoothie. Cheese
God
was
forbid
like,
you blend it. Don't blend
right.
It.
Yeah. I put cheese in something and that's like an indulgence because cheese has a lot of calories. It's like, it was so, I love food. Like I am a foodie. I love food. But I was so restrictive because I thought I had to be to maintain that figure. So again, it was like, it wasn't because I was like, I need to get skinnier. It was almost like a competition with myself where I was like, well, shoot, if I do this, look at these outcomes. It's crazy. I didn't realize there was another way. So now it's like, I eat, again, I'm 5 feet tall. I want to reiterate that. You guys, anybody listening to this, you can adapt your metabolism to consume more and more and more and maintain. I eat like 2400 to 2800 calories a day. And I maintain, but it's because I have put in all this time strength training and putting on muscle mass.
I want everybody to just take a pause there and think, how nice would that be to be able to eat that many calories and not gain a pound? What kind of life is that? Like being able to have that freedom.
And again, to get here, I've put on a couple pounds, but if you mm-hmm. looked at me, you wouldn't know because it is lean mass.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I know we covered a lot of really good stuff there and there's a lot I want to get into, but since we're on the topic of metabolic adaptation, that seems to be like a hot topic right now because there's people that are like reverse dieting is BS, like calorie counting is garbage. Like, where do you stand on that? And like, how do you go about it in the coaching where it's like, all right, we're focusing on the quality of the foods and not counting so much, but how do we ensure that we get results?
So I now have most of my clients track. So it's funny, the evolution of that, of me going from tracking and being very rigid about it. So I thought, uh-oh, that's not healthy, to being like, okay, we're not going to track. We're going to intuitively eat, to now I use a balance with my clients. Yeah. Almost everybody, I start them with a protein and a calorie goal. I'm basing it on whatever their current, like they're going to track for a few weeks before we set that goal. So I can see what their actual baseline is and how their body's adapting. And I do have them track. Now, some people will weigh and measure their foods for the first couple months so that they can learn what they're putting into their bodies. Other people, I say, okay, estimate. And when we to a certain point where we stop seeing results, then maybe we need to get more granular than we can. But I usually start every client with a reverse diet. And I call it a muscle building phase because I don't ever reverse diet people without also saying, hey, we're going to use these extra calories and this protein towards putting lean muscle on, because my goal is to set them up for an effective fat loss phase after, if they are with us to lose fat. So yeah, I start every single client with a muscle building phase. And I've seen those posts from all those coaches who are like, anybody who's trying to put you in a reverse diet is just trying to take your money. They're like, what in the world? Like if we didn't get clients' results, then we wouldn't have a business. Like that doesn't make sense. Like my goal is not to keep you as my client forever. My goal is to get your body working so well and get you understanding why we're implementing the tools we're implementing, so someday you don't need me ever again. Like that's the long game. And the long game is I want your base metabolic rate to improve through adding muscle. If you add muscle and then you quit because you never saw fat loss, or let me reiterate, you quit because you never saw weight loss. because a lot of women do get leaner during that process. They lose inches. I guarantee whatever program they go on to do, where they severe diet or they do this crazy cardio or whatever, they will lose weight because they've just set their metabolism up for success. So I can at least feel ethically good that like I'm putting them in a healthier place than they were in before.
Yeah. And it's almost like that case of like the best, like with exercise, the best exercise program is the one you're not doing. And it's the same kind of with dieting, where it's like the best diet is the one you haven't tried yet, in a way that does things differently. Like if you've been dieting forever, maybe you need a reverse diet, and then your body's going to respond incredibly well.
Right. And it's just because it's not because we need to just change it up all the time. It's because your body adapts, and our body's going to adapt to whatever inputs we give it. And eventually we're going to plateau. And that's why if you've done group classes, the first few months, you're like, this works great. I'm seeing awesome results. And then you kind of plateau. Like that is the nature of the game. That's why we need to progressively overload when we're lifting. That's why we need to periodize our nutrition in the exact same way that we do with our training.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, let's circle back a little bit before we go there, I want to talk about the mental benefits when it comes to reverse dieting, because that's one thing that I think doesn't get enough love and enough airtime. And that is like when people start getting more calories to operate with, all of a sudden their adherence gets a lot better. Have you noticed that?
Oh yeah. And it's funny because then they're like, wait, I have to, when they say they want to go into a deficit, they're like, wait, I have to cut calories now. And I'm like, yes, you finally enjoy food again. Their appetites come back. Like usually when they start, if they've been dieting for a long time, they're like, I'm not hungry. I don't even want breakfast. This is so hard to eat this much. Their appetites start to come back. Their libidos improve. They have more energy. They sleep better. I have like 35 to 40 clients at a time, but most of them are with me for about a year and a half. So maybe out of 70 clients total in the past couple of years, I've had more than 10 get pregnant who told me, I can't get pregnant. I've been trying for years. I've been seeing these doctors. We literally just reverse diet them and pull back their cardio and give them strength training instead. And it's like sending their body a signal saying like, hey, we're safe. We can thrive now. We can start to produce these reproduction hormones again versus just being in survival mode and trying to live. Like if your body's super stressed out, it's just getting by. It is just in survival mode. Your energy improves. All these things start to improve during this process of just feeding your body and saying like, hey, we're not starving. We're safe.
Yeah. I think a lot of people don't really understand the hormonal impact of long distance running while starving yourself for years, because there's a lot of people in that camp right now that are just stuck, and they're like, I don't know what gives. Like I work out, I run all the time, and I eat really well, and nothing happens.
Yeah. And it's like from an evolutionary standpoint, how do you think your body is adapting, right? If it thinks we're running away from something, we're super stressed, even if you're like, no, running's relaxing for me. Your body can't tell the difference, right? If we're running to survive, we're running from a threat, or if we're running for fun, right? So taking some of those stressors back, or adding in recovery modalities, adding in guided meditation, yoga, deep breathing, like it's really this scale of, okay, if you're running that much, we need to eat more and we need to sleep more and we need to do some slowdown activities, or we need to reduce the running. If that's easier, why not just reduce the running and increase your food intake some, and suddenly your hormones start balancing themselves out.
Yeah. And then when you try and do that, it almost seems like it's almost like trying to pull a binky away. And it's like, no, I want my running.
Yeah.
I want my running. And you're just like, well, why do we want this running so bad?
Yeah, it's a lot of like options. Like, and again, I don't know if this goes back to the sales background or to like me having kids. It's like, if I want my kid to do something, I don't say like, you're not allowed to touch that outlet. It's like, hey, why don't we focus on these two things instead? Which would you prefer to play with? With clients, a lot of times it's like, okay, I'm going to give you options. You tell me your preference. Like, do you prefer to like really own these endurance goals that you have? Or do you prefer to balance your hormone health and improve your physique? Pick. And they're like, well, I want both. And it's like, okay, that's cool. But like, we need to make one a priority if you want to make changes from where you are right now. And if you tell me that this is your choice, I'm going to tell you the stuff that's required in terms of inputs to get there. And are you willing to sign up for that? Because I'm not going to push it on you. This is your life and these are your choices. You just need to be educated on the outcomes of these choices that you want to make.
Yeah. And for everybody listening, this is what all the coaches that actually get really good results, this is how they communicate with clients. Not do this, I'm your drill instructor. It's you have options. I'm going to tell you what to do to get each one. But at the end of the day, if you want it all, it's like chasing two rabbits at the same time. You're going to go hungry.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. I think that those are the toughest. I mean, I don't know what your clients are mostly women over 40, right?
Correct.
Okay. So yeah, same clientele that I'm working with. Really women anywhere between their 30s and 50s, I would say is kind of like my client group. But they're the toughest women to work with. They're the toughest clients to work with. I've had a few male clients and I'm like, man, sign me up all day because they don't have these like years of programming about, wait, you're telling me I have to do less and eat more. Like, what do you mean? Like, that's going to make me gain weight.
I'm almost the opposite with that because at least when I've come across guys are like, I know what to do. I got this. Don't worry.
Oh yeah.
And you're just like, all right, well, why are you here then?
Yeah, so. That may be the case, but yeah, I feel like there's always a lot of this, if a coach tells you what to do, there's going to be some sort of tug of war. Like nobody wants to be told what to do if they don't want to do it. So it's like always about going back to like meeting them where they are, giving them options and like helping them get 1% healthier than they were last week. And then after a year being like, hey, look, by the way, while we've been working on your health, look what happened to your physique. It changed as a side effect of all these healthy inputs, but you're not even mentioning the scale anymore in our check-ins. How cool is that?
Exactly. Oh my God. If I'm about to make shirts like fuck the scale because it's seriously so overrated. Like when it comes to our overall health, how much do you think weight even plays a role when it comes to that other than seriously high BMIs? Other than that, like does it
other
have
than
any
body
effect?
Body fat even, because people with high BMIs, like Arnold Schwarzenegger probably has a high BMI based on his muscle mass.
I'm talking gen pop because us fitness people are an anomaly in the
medical
different field.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's frustrating to me because I had so many conversations last week with clients who had like checkups whose doctors told them, well, you better lose weight. You need to do this. Do you want to try Ozempic? And I'm like, oh my gosh, like you've put on 10 pounds of muscle mass. Your inches haven't increased at all. Like, let's be happy. Like, oh, let's look at the body composition changes because your insulin sensitivity is going to be better. Like get your doctor to run labs because I bet your insulin sensitivity is better. I bet your bone density is better. I bet like you're all of these other energy and health markers that you're telling me about are healthier. And your metabolism's faster now. Like we are setting you up for sustained fat loss, not just weight loss.
Yeah. I wish a lot of the doctor's offices would just invest in in-body scanners because even though they're not perfect, they give you a better idea of just weight. Like, because that way you have some sort of idea like, hey, did we increase bone and muscle mass? And it's like, if that's the case, your metabolic health is great, like drastically improving.
Yeah. No, that would be amazing if they did that. I know some of the doctor's offices, some of the ones that prescribe that I've talked to that prescribe semaglutide do require a body composition scan, which I'm happy
awesome
to hear because I know there's a lot that do not and they only go off of weight. But yeah, I've talked to a couple recently that require an in-body scan to continue on those medicine because they want to make sure that people are taking in enough protein and maintaining muscle mass.
Yeah. Cause I will say with all the weight loss drugs being like more popular now and more widely prescribed, it is bringing a lot of good things into the conversation. Like now we're learning you need to eat high protein if you want to maintain your lean body mass. You need to resistance train to keep that lean body mass. And if you lose a lot of lean body mass, your chances of regaining all that weight back post Ozempic, Wegovy,
Tirzepatide
goes way up.
Yeah. And yeah, it's fresh. The topic frustrates me so much because there's like aesthetic salons that are prescribing it and they don't have anybody educated who's helping people with it. But you're right. That's the power of social media too, is that like, at least there's now people in the fitness world who know what they're talking about, giving that insight also. And there are some good medical doctors out there also
and
leading
I do
people
think
in that direction.
I do think it comes down to coaching and guidance, because all these methods are pretty crappy without good coaches to implement it or good practitioners to guide you. Like Weight Watchers in itself, probably pretty decent. But the problem is they have all these coaches that don't know diddly squat about nutrition saying, just keep working the program, you're doing great. And it's like, well, that didn't really help anybody.
Yeah.
And then it's like calorie counting. People will drop down to 1200 calories, wreck themselves, and then be like, calorie counting sucks. It's like, no, you didn't have somebody teaching you.
And we didn't know what to do after we lost the weight either. Like I've had clients who come to me after coaching with another coach. Oh, I know what to do. I've been tracking my calories for however many years. My coach had me doing macros. And I'm like, okay, what do you mean by that? And they will be like, oh, well, I've been eating 1400 calories. And I'm like, for like how long? Well, all year. They never adjusted anything. And I'm like, well, your body adapted to that at some point, and now we're just chilling here and nothing's changing at 1400 calories and you're hungry. Like at a certain point, your body adapts. So we have to work with a coach who knows what to look for, knows what to look for in terms of the physical changes of like, okay, when's it an appropriate time to change your plan so that your body continues adapting, but also that behavioral piece that you mentioned, it's like so important. Like you don't want a coach that's just a cheerleader who like, you can have an accountability buddy for that. You want somebody who's really providing you tools so that you can change the person that you are, so that future you doesn't run into the same things and go through the motions of the same habits that you've done in the past.
Yeah, because if you keep finding yourself like post whatever program you run, being like, well, life got busy. Oh, just my schedule got jam packed. And it's like, well, that's no excuse to drop your fitness and nutrition entirely. Did you not learn how to keep it in the rotation? Oh, you did.
Yeah.
Okay. Then you didn't actually have any really good help, did you?
Yeah, I like to ask people, especially like when it comes to programming for workouts, on our intake form, we ask how many days a week are you willing to work out and how many days are you currently working out? And I love this question and I love the order of it, because every single person says 5 or 6 days a week, I'm willing to. And then I ask, how long have you been or how much are you working out now? And they're like, maybe one every now and then. And I'm like, all right, we're going to start with two, maybe three. Let's make three a stretch goal. And they're like, no, I'm really motivated while I'm starting this program. And I always ask, like, what can you commit to on your worst week? Like, my kids are sick. I didn't get good sleep. Something came up and there's an appliance person in my kitchen. Like, how many days can I work out on that week? Because if I can make that my non-negotiable all year round, I'm going to be more successful than if I work out 6 days a week and then I burn out in a month.
Exactly.
Like that cycle is not effective.
Exactly. And for anybody who caught the most previous episode with Sarah Welsh, we talked about the concept of building momentum. Okay. This is that, where it's like, you got to have a lot of little wins that stack up and build that momentum.
Yeah. And that's going to keep you motivated too. You did a mm-hmm. post about action, something about action breeds motivation recently.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I feel like
the motivation comes after.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Once you start doing these things consistently, you start to have this self-efficacy where you're like, I can do hard things. And then you're ready to take on another thing. And it just becomes part of your life. So like, people say like, oh, the more you do it, the easier it gets. And it's like, it doesn't get easier, but you are now equipped with better skills. So for you now, it's just going through the motions, because this is now your new habit. This is your new norm. And overcoming those previous thought patterns while you're creating these new habits, that's the hard part. But once you get to that point of maintenance, and I'm not talking maintenance in your physique, I'm saying like maintenance in terms of your lifestyle, like that's your new norm. And now life is easier to maintain. I love like the compound effect and like atomic habits. I feel like a lot of those concepts are things, again, really good coaches use of like, we're just going to get 1% better week over week. And as long as we're in the right direction, like in 5 years, imagine where you could be.
Yeah. If anybody here listening has not read or listened to Atomic Habits, that's like a must read. It is so, so good. I know I use it a ton in my coaching as well.
Yeah, that's a really good one. We send it to some of our clients, like at our 6 week mark, we send them books. And that is a really, really good one. Definitely recommend.
Yeah, that's huge. So when it comes to brain health, I wanted to circle back to that because I had a question and I'm curious on your take, being that you have a formal education in this stuff. Like, what about those people who find themselves like, say, clinically depressed, or they just can't find that motivation like we just talked about, what are some steps to like get the momentum going? Because exercise has a ton of benefits, but one of the biggest hurdles is the fact that people just can't get themselves to the gym for whatever reason that is. So if you were working with somebody, what would you, or somebody right now listening, what would you tell them?
This is such a tough, that is the biggest challenge, I think. I was actually talking to a friend about this. She said that I could share her story on my social media, so I feel comfortable sharing. She has been clinically diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and she struggled with it for a long time. And she recently started first just walking outside, then going for jogs. And it was like these, again, small little steps. And then she stopped ordering lunch out every day and started making lunch at home and bringing it. So it was like these tiny things that added up. And she recently joined a gym for the first time. So we've obviously been talking, and I'm like, all right, we got to get you on the muscle train and away from just cardio. Like, you can keep your cardio for your mental health. She started coming to the gym, and she texted me the other day and said, hey, this is crazy, but like, since I started going to the gym every single day, I would say, like, symptoms wise, I think she said 85%. She was like, I think I noticed like an 85% difference. And she's been on medication for this for years. Since adding exercise, she's noticed that significant of a difference in her symptoms. And I asked her that question that you just asked me. Well, how do we get people to do that? And she's like, I don't know what came first. She's like, going to like getting an actual help from a psychiatrist. To if you need to be on medication, I think seeking help is one of the hardest things, because we see this, we see mental health as a stigma. Whereas like, I wear contacts and I wear glasses because my vision isn't that good. If you can't see well, you just go to the eye doctor and you correct it, right? But we have this thing with the brain where we're like, I don't want to tell anybody that I'm thinking these thoughts. Maybe you need eyeglasses for your brain, you know, like maybe you need to go and get some sort of, whether it's forever or temporary medication. Some people might need that. Some people might need to go to cognitive behavioral therapy to work on tools to feel comfortable to step out of the house, to try something hard when they're starting to have anxiety. So I think it's a culmination of those things. But once you feel comfortable, do something small. You do not need to go overhaul your life and follow some rigorous 5-day a week lifting plan. Go for a walk every day.
So they're not supposed to do 75 hard right away?
Oh my gosh. If we could do a whole episode on 75 hard. Don't do 75 hard. If you, for anybody, if you are doing it, don't work out twice a day, 7 days a week. Yeah, just start small. Do a little bit of something every day. Do 2 minutes of something. Wake up and say, you know what? I'm not going to leave the room until I do 10 push-ups. That might be your only thing for the next month. And then maybe next month you add 10 squats to your 10 push-ups. Or again, maybe it's just a walk outside. And eventually, in the exact same way that we were talking about with any other client, you're going to start to have more and more of this confidence to be able to make your next step. And again, I think that there's a lot of value to working with a professional who can kind of guide you through that and help you feel more comfortable. With my clients who are nervous and have never been in a gym, I might write them programming at first, just using dumbbells in the corner of the gym so they can get comfortable just being there. And then they're like, okay, I think I'm ready to try some machines now, or I'm ready to try a barbell now. Like, let's ease into it. Like, you don't have to go balls to the wall. Like, let's just take a small step. What are you willing to do? And what are you able to do right now every day? Mm-hmm. Let's just do that little thing.
Yeah, exactly. And while you were talking about that, two quotes were just like screaming at me the entire time. Like, I don't know if you ever heard like the Jim Carrey quote where he talks about mental disorders and things like that. But he's like, there are people out there that need the meds and everything, but like, give yourself a chance first by getting some sunlight, like by putting or by getting some exercise, by doing things that make you feel good. And I think that there are a significant amount of people that may not be clinical, but that are in that gray space in between that are like, they just need that taste of how good it can feel.
I think I'm one of those people. And it's like so significant when I am not in this, when I don't get time outside, when I'm just on a computer and looking at a screen for a couple of days and I'm like, what is going on? I don't feel good. Sometimes I have clients as homework when they are going through like, I don't know, I'm feeling a little depressed. I'm in a slump. And I'll have them do an exercise where I just want you to write a whole list of things that make you feel good. And it could be something silly, like I'm going to dance in the kitchen with my kids, or like, I'm just going to go outside for 5 minutes and like, let my face see the sunshine. It could be anything silly. I'm going to make a bubble bath. But like, maybe just write a list of those things. And maybe every day we can just add one of those things that makes you feel a little more positive. And it's not like these things are the solution. It's the skill of learning to associate your inputs with how you feel. Because once you can start to hone in on that, you'll start to realize like, oh, wow, when I eat like shit, like I really don't feel good the next day. I don't want to feel like that. Like,
you're like chasing the good feeling instead of avoiding a bad feeling.
Yeah. Focus on what we can do. Focus on what we're willing to do. I talk with my clients a lot about, I'm losing my train of thought here. What was I saying about the, it's not about the thing. It's not about the bath or whatever. It's about building that association with how are we feeling? So like with food, that's where I was going with this. With food, a lot of people will say, but I really wanted this thing. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, if we're only looking at the value of taste, I want cheese fries and pad thai every single meal for the rest of my life. But
that
like,
wouldn't be so bad.
Do I want the other outcomes associated with it? Like, do I want to be like constipated from having no like fiber in my life? Or like, do I want to just feel greasy and gross? Like, do I want to not work towards my fitness goals? So at the end of the day, I don't really want that thing right now. And sometimes I might choose that I want it. And it's worth it. And it, because I'm valuing the taste over these other things. But oftentimes, even if I want it for the taste, I don't ultimately want it. And then I might make a different choice.
Well, it comes down to having that conversation instead of just like flying by your emotions. It's like, okay, let's check in with me and see what is actually satisfying my goals and my values right now. And it kind of leads into that second quote that I was going to bring up, which is like, I know people have their opinions on Alex Hormozi, but every once in a while he drops a gem. And one of them was, you just need to keep stacking undeniable proof that you are who you say you are. Like, you can't affirm yourself to being who you want to be because there's no action with that. You got to put the action in.
Yeah, that is enormous. And then you start to believe it. It's like, mm-hmm. Other people wouldn't trust you if you didn't show up to your appointments, or if you were late to things, or if you said you were going to do something and you didn't do it. Like, don't give yourself, like, give yourself at least the same respect you would give anybody else. If you say you're going to work out on Tuesday, show up, because now you start to believe in the person that you say you're going to be. Like you said, it's not, yeah, that's a great quote. I love it.
Yeah. And it's like, if this were a college class, when it comes to health and fitness, the only thing that determines the grade is your attendance policy. Like, you don't get to skip class over and over again and get an A. This is like gym class. You need to show up.
Yeah, it's like I like the analogy of finances to fitness, mm-hmm. because it's like you can only make so many withdrawals until your bank account is empty. Like, do you want to be in debt or do you want to make more deposits than you make withdrawals? Some days I skip the gym because I want a rest day. Like, that's fine. And when I say this, I mean in terms of consistency. I do not work out 7 days a week. I lift usually 3 or 4 days a week. But if I need a break, I take a break. If I want to have the cheese fries, I have the cheese fries, but I'm making a calculated choice that that's a withdrawal that's worth it for me. And I'm making sure I make more deposits than withdrawals over time.
Yep. And anybody like listening right now, it's like, damn, must be nice. And it's like, well, just know that Jessie's also a parent and she's pulling all of this off. So she's walking the walk. Like, what has that been like trying to implement all of these tips and everything while also balancing? You have two daughters, correct?
I have two daughters. One is 2 years old and one is 3 and a half.
Gotcha. And I saw the Turkish getup with the two of them on you for bedtime. That was awesome.
Yeah, we'll see. They're going to outgrow me. I'm pretty short and my husband's tall. They're going to outgrow me. So we'll see how long I can hold that up. It has been really humbling. So like, I think before having kids, I was like, well, I work out, so I'll have a perfect pregnancy and postpartum will be easy and I'll be able to lift because I worked out during my pregnancies. Very humbling. And I've learned that you have to give your body grace. And I always, any client I have who says they want to have kids at some point, I'm like, start lifting weights now. Set your metabolism up, put on lean muscle mass so that you can afford rest after having kids. And that is not just
and
the physical.
Also making the carrying easier. Like, it's like you're doing a farmer carry forever.
Yes. You're carrying so much stuff all the time. So I think the physical journey was humbling. But then also, once you have kids, stuff's going to pop up. Like, you, everybody says this who has kids, but like, you didn't realize how much time you had before until you don't have that time anymore, because other people are consuming all of your time and they're waking up in the middle of the night all the time and you don't sleep that well. And I work. So it's like all these things in life. I think one is like managing expectations that like, okay, a good week for me some weeks might be only 2 lifts, and that's okay. Like, I'm not working out 5 days a week like I was when I was training in person before I had kids. And that's okay. So adjusting expectations, doing what you can do. Like, I try to go to now that we have a gym locally that has childcare, it has changed my life. Because before that, we didn't. The gym that I work at doesn't have childcare. So I would work out in the basement gym at my house and the kids would be here and I do what I can. I get 2 sets in and then we have a meltdown or I need to switch laundry or something comes up. Maybe I come back and I finish my workout later, or maybe I don't, but I did something. So like, versus just calling in and saying like, well, I couldn't do anything today. Doing a little bit of something I think is really important. And then I guess like managing rest has, okay, cool. Managing yeah. rest has become way more important. Prioritizing sleep when you can. Knowing that some days rest is more important than go, 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 because it's going to be healthier for me physically too. And now I'm also pretty invested in like, how do I get my kids to want to do healthy things and eat well, even when they're picky? Like, this, it has become a fun new challenge for me, but like, yeah, everything changes. And set your body up for success by building as much muscle as you can, because then you can get away with doing less in the gym.
Yep. Yep. Maintenance is so much easier than building.
Yep. Yep.
Because
yep,
what is it? You only need like 30% of the volume that you do when compared to when you're trying to build muscle. It's insane.
That is what I've heard. Yeah. Yeah. It is pretty cool. Once you, and again, I got to see that firsthand whenever. So I had some pregnancy complications with my second and like a high risk factor stuff where I would have premature contractions from like 5 months pregnant on, where they were like, okay, you really got to stop lifting. And I'm like, what? I don't know. This is what I do. So I didn't lift for months with my second pregnancy and into a couple months postpartum. And it was cool seeing that, like, all right, my body's got me. And at some point my metabolism's going to slow down, right? If I just do that forever, but like setting up that foundation of muscle mass really helps you out, and not having been in a dieted state beforehand, having been at maintenance, eating plenty of calories, then when I go to not exercise, it doesn't really impact my calories in, calories out game very much, because my body's adapted up here. Whereas if I was adapted to 1200 calories and used to doing tons of running, and then I had to stop, my body probably would have paid a pretty significant consequence there.
Yeah. I mean, talk about an easy setup to gain a lot of body weight and put yourself in a bad situation. Like, pregnancy has so many like good things that come out of it. A child, I mean, come on.
Biggest, yeah.
But at the end of the day, it does set you up to gain a lot of weight if we don't have certain things in place.
Yeah. And I gained a lot of weight, healthy weight too. Like, it's important that you gain healthy fat during pregnancy. I gained yeah.
What's
30
the number?
Pounds.
It's 5 to 10%, I think, right? Like along the 9 months, something like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what it is.
I might be going over.
It might be right. I don't know. I gained 30 pounds exactly with both kids. And again, like, I'm at this point in my journey, did not care what I look like. I'm like, cool, I am still healthy. I feel good. You know, like, I was much more focused on that than on, like, probably 6 months postpartum with my second. I was like, okay, come on. Like, time to get, what's happening here?
Tick tock, let's go.
But I did. I gained a lot of weight. And the way that I then bounced back, I'm going to, again, put that in air quotes, because I hate that people have that pressure.
Yeah, that's been butchered.
Yeah. Ugh. And the way that I did that was not dieting. I did not cut calories as soon as I had this baby, because your body's in a stressed out state and you're not sleeping enough. Cutting calories will send more stress signals to your body. So instead, increase your protein, increase your fruits and veggies, add strength when you feel ready physically, work on learning to brace your core again, because all of your organs have been miscombobulated, and do that. And eat at maintenance for at least 6 months before you feel like you need to diet postpartum.
I know people are hearing that like, you mean I can't lose weight for 6 months?
You will lose weight if you set yourself up.
Aha, so, there we go.
Aha. So I almost think of it. I don't know if this is right scientifically, but I'm going to tell you what I think. During pregnancy, we are creating new tissues in our body, right? So think of like bodybuilders who want to be in an anabolic state so they can build muscle. Our body is in an anabolic state. Like, why not utilize that? During pregnancy, when your body is ready to build new tissue, feed up, eat a lot of protein, and get strong. Because if you can put on some muscle during that time, after the baby, your body is in a catabolic. We're ready to get back to normal, find homeostasis again, lose body fat. Now, if you've built yourself up to that, you just eat like normal and your body will now lose body fat postpartum. And you can kind of get your body to work for you like that without having to be so meticulous. And I never have clients postpartum. Like within the first 2 or 3 months, I never have them track calories because I'm like, you just feed your baby and like try to get some sleep and like, let's learn how to brace your core again. Yeah. But yeah, you can set your body up to work for you without having to diet and you will lose body fat. But you don't have to cut calories and starve yourself and do crazy exercise.
Yes, that is a great one that I'd love to like cap this off on. Now, last thing on the agenda though, is the final question. So I know you've listened to a few podcast episodes. Do you know what's coming?
No, I don't. I've listened to a few like through the topics and then I think you go to wrap it up and I'm like, okay, this one's, what's the other topic I want to learn about?
Gotcha. Well, you're in for a fun one because basically we have a tradition where the previous guest leaves a question for the next guest without knowing who they are.
Oh, gosh.
I totally ripped it off from Diary of a CEO because that guy runs one hell of a podcast. Not great at vetting his people, but he runs a good podcast. So this one comes from Sarah Welsh, who I mentioned prior. She was the last guest and she asked, what is your morning routine?
Ah, okay. I like this. I do not have a particular morning routine. My days are different. So I work like full days, 3 days a week. And then I work a half day one day. And I have one day that I'm home with my kids completely. And I have one child who does not sleep through the night completely. So my days always look different. I am trying to sleep as much as I possibly can. And when my kids wake me up, I wake up. I do not have an alarm clock set. Now, with that said, I have a routine that is non-negotiable in my week. So every day at some point during my day, I am journaling gratitudes. Sometimes it's gratitudes. Sometimes it's like a brain dump of like goals or visions. Like, where do I see myself going? Sometimes it is affirmations. And now I hate like woo-woo affirmation stuff, but it's like, for me, if I can put it into existence by putting it on paper and saying it, my actions are going to follow. And then I always have in my routine, my lifting. So I build my lifting into my workday. I work 3 full days a week where I don't have my kids here or there with a sitter. First thing in the morning, I go to the gym on those 3 days and it cuts into my day. And sometimes I spend an hour and a half there because I enjoy it. But I always do it. And the days that I do it, I tell you, like, I feel like I have more time in my day because I am a more productive human when I am taking care of my body. What that looks like, some sort of intentional mobility practice before some really heavy compound lifts. At night. So my husband and I started this a long time ago. This would be the third thing that I would say is part of my daily routine. I volunteered for this organization. It's called Little Pink Houses of Hope. They help women with breast cancer have vacations with their families, basically. At the end of each day, the volunteers would get together and we would talk about, hey, what was your best part of your day? And it just forces you to kind of look, you know, we're going to do it each night. So you start to look for the good in the day. Me and my husband do that every night before we go to bed. So like, we say, what was the best part of your day? And then we say a prayer together. And that's part of my routine. And I think, again, it's really good to look for the good in life and look for opportunity as opposed to dwelling on all the stuff that goes wrong, because stuff does go wrong and life is life. So that is how we wrap up our day. What's the best part?
That's awesome. I love that, especially the fact that it's like a floating, flexible one, because as we know, life is not the same every single day, but for some reason we try to plan it that way.
Yeah. And it's just not. So I don't know. A lot of gurus say you got to wake up at 4 a.m. and do all this stuff. And I did wake up at 4 a.m. for a while to train people in person. And I was not my best self at those hours. So
yeah. Any trainer who's done that grind where you got to wake up at 4 to meet people at 5 or 6 and then work until like 9 p.m. can tell you that's some bullshit. Like, you are not your best.
I was napping in my car during my 8 a.m. break from 8 to 9 a.m.
Yep. I actually have a little dinger on my car because I didn't like feel rested enough and like slid into the guardrail for a brief moment.
Scary.
And I walked in and I'm like, this is because you assholes put me on the schedule so early.
Yeah. At 5 a.m., the 4 a.m. wake up. I don't ever plan to go back. So.
Yep. Absolutely. That's why we're online. We did the smart thing. We got out.
We got the experience. All of you people who want to be online, go get the experience, do it in person. And then someday, this is the dream.
Yeah. I know that people have conflicting opinions on that, but like, I have a really hard time, like, really jumping on board that somebody's a really good coach without doing some in person, because there's so many things that you learn.
Yeah. And I have a couple coaches on our team who have not, we have two that haven't had in-person experience, and they are very good. But the gap for me is the cues and stuff that you learn when you're in person.
Yep.
It's nearly impossible to give online if you've never physically been with somebody watching their form and saying like, okay, if I touch your back here, feel this, or like whatever. I feel like it was, it's a huge value to get that experience.
Yeah. Or getting out of the technical language, like where it's like, well, I saw this on a certification or a YouTube video and it's like, you should be doing this. Why are you not doing that? And then
it's
you're like,
what's going to make them understand it? You got to speak their language. Yeah.
But when you've done it thousands of times over like the course of 5 years, you're like, bang. Okay.
Yep.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Jesse. I know everybody got a lot out of it. And for anybody listening right now that had that like aha moment, like, oh my God, my friend needs to hear this. Go and send it their way. They'll love you for it. And so will we. Now, Jesse, if they want to find you, cause they're like, wow, Jesse's awesome. I want to hear more of her stuff. Where can they get in contact with you and find all your stuff?
So I am on Instagram at Jesse ReFit, Jesse with just an E and then R-E, fit. And Brian, I'm excited about this because I feel like you have similar messaging. Me and Jill, who owns Fueled by Balance, are actually starting a podcast. It's called Reality Check with Jess and Jill. And we've recorded a lot of episodes, but we have not published it yet. So keep an eye out on my Instagram, and then I'll link that podcast there as well. It's kind of like a Mythbusters for fitness trends, where we give context to all the BS.
Love that. Love that. Well, I'll definitely be listening the second it comes out. And everybody who is listening right now, if you guys want, you can go down to the show notes. All that will be in the show notes. You can just click away instead of having to search. So Jesse, thank you again. And to everybody listening, thank you for tuning in. I will see you all next week, same time, same place. But until then, go kick some ass. I'll see you later.